Everyone's back. You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 447. Welcome to the Punk News Podcast. Welcome back to the Punk News Podcast. My name is Adam White. I'm recording for you here in my basement, Niagara Falls, Ontario. All relaxed and rested and recharged. Joining me after a little break is Mr. John Gentile out of Philadelphia. Hey, John.
Adam, as opposed to being relaxed and recharged, I am exhausted and worn out after my vacation. Let me tell you, it was, well, a week, but 4 days of pure mania.
Ooh. Well, we will get to this. Also, Mr. Tom Trauma joining us out of somewhere near Grand Rapids.
Yes. The new golden era. The new golden era of the Pine Club. The new golden era of the podcast Dream Team. We are back together again.
You were going to say Pinecast, and I was going to start.
I don't know.
I was going to start riffing on making wood puns or something.
I just moved to the back room so I could have relative peace. And I got to tell you, man, I need to crack a window all of a sudden. Holy cow. I think I'm sweating. Yeah, having a stroke. Can I feel my left side? Yes, a little.
Can you feel a little bit more?
I don't know.
You should try.
It's all good. I can stroke and still do this thing.
Oh, well, see, you're hardy, Tom.
Exactly. I'm a hardy Midwesterner. It goes from being like 42 degrees in the morning to like 82 degrees in the evening, and we're all good.
You know, a little bit of heat, a little bit of cold, a little bit of stroke. None of this deters you.
Stroke me, like the great Billy Squire once said.
So, anyways, yeah, we're all back. we've all been gone. There was an episode that was recorded in my absence that I haven't posted yet, but I'll get on that. So I'm not aware of what's going on. But to our listeners, there has definitely been a gap. And the first gap since we really got back on the saddle of, releasing these suckers after we record them. So, let's chat maybe about where we've been and what we've been up to and what's been going on. I think we were each somewhere different. We were each somewhere with a varying, degree of punk rock, mine probably the least. And, fuck the news. Let's just talk about us, because we're really what's important.
We're the real draw.
Yeah. Yes.
People want to hear about our adventures.
So
who wants to go first? Adam, you go first since you had the least punk rock adventure.
I did have the least punk rock adventure. Like, wonderfully so.
Get away from all you stinky bastards.
it was really nice. I was ignoring all sorts of stuff. At one point, well, I was this factors in. Well, at one point, and during my adventure, I got a message from Mr. Greg Simpson of our sister podcast there about the about that band. What's that band called?
There Might Be Giants.
No, it was like Bloodhound Gang. He has a Bloodhound Gang podcast, and They Might Be Giants. He sent me a message at one point, and he was like, can you post a story about something I'm doing for my podcast? And I'm like,
no.
This is the least amount I've ever cared about anything going on the Punk News universe. So, no. I shouldn't even be responding to you. And that was my intent. So, yeah, my wife and I were in Jamaica. It was our 10th anniversary. We ditched our kids with the grandparents, and we left the, are you still in North America when you're in the Caribbean? I'm not even sure. We definitely left Canada. That's all that's important. We got away.
You left the north part of North America.
We left the northish part of North America and ended up in the, what is potentially still North America, but far less north. And it was nice because we played our cards right with how we wanted this vacation to work. This is our first time going anywhere of any significant time frame, I think, since we had our kids, at least since we've had the two kids together. And we really purposely wanted to not have anything going on. Like we wanted like the sleepiest, less busy, like no running around, no touring. We didn't want to go on excursions. We didn't want to have to do shit. And we have achieved that. And I feel like I have the formula for how to achieve that, at least in Jamaica. And the formula is go to Negril. Now, Negril, John, why is Negril important?
Oh, well, lots of famous Jamaican artists come from Negril. Negril also used to be a famously dangerous area. And that's also where the Alpha Boys School is located, where many famous Jamaican singers came from. Did I hit it? Did I hit any of the right marks, Adam?
You hit lots of the right marks. It is the it is the Jamaican hometown of your buddy, Mr. Lee Scratch Perry.
And that's
his,
right.
And his glorious red beard. I did not see Scratch, but this sort of factors into my I ain't doing shit. Unless he was walking down the beach trying to braid my hair, I was probably not going to see Scratch because. You know, we went nowhere and did nothing on purpose, and it was really good. But Negril, if you were ever headed down that way, it is an hour and a bit of a drive away from where the airport is. So if you're going to Negril, you fly into Montego Bay, and the actual resorts that are in Montego Bay are apparently way busier, way closer to say like the cruise ship vibe of. A lot of entertainment, a lot of stuff going on, a lot of like partiers and revelry and things like that. You want to go to Negril, you're sort of committing to trekking a little bit out of town. And I think by and large, the places out there are a little bit more relaxed and restrained, which was the kind of thing we were shooting for. And to my pleasure to discover, this resort that we were at was basically. It was basically 1960 there. Like, not that it was run down, but that there was nothing going on that could not have been going on at a similar kind of resort, you know, at any point in the last 50 years. Like, you know, you had a bed and you had food and you had, you know, chairs on the beach and a pool and lots of rum drinks. And that was it. Like, there was no modernity to it, which was just wonderful because that's what we wanted. I mean, there was probably Wi-Fi there, but I didn't take advantage of it. And that was really important to me. Like, I did not want to be on a phone. I didn't want to be talking to people or connected to the world. We were there for a week and we didn't turn on the TV that was in the room. It was that was absolutely the vibe that I was shooting for. And I have this habit, and I got into this habit because, so we took a cruise a number of years ago, and I decided that if I'm going on a boat, I don't want to be just like some clod on a boat that's a glorified shopping mall. I wanted to be like boat proper, which is to say, I wanted boat clothing. I wanted, you know, I wanted like
Exciters?
Yeah, like I wanted
shorts
like,
that barely touch your thighs.
I wanted boat shoes. I wanted like pastel clothes. I wanted like nautical themed shit. Like I wanted like blue stripes.
What are you gonna do with that after your trip, though, Adam?
No. So we go on this cruise.
Like Captain Dumbass.
We went on this cruise, and I get on there, and I'm like Julie, like I'm who is my wife, by the way. I'm like Julie. I'm going full boat when we are on this boat. So. I went out and I got some clothes before this, and I like hit the thrift stores and all this stuff. And I built this wardrobe that I considered very boat. And so we got onto the cruise ship, and we're walking down the hallways, and I'm all boat the way I am dressed. I feel very boat. And every once in a while you'd walk by like a 90-year-old dude that was in like completely salmon colored clothing. And I'd be like, and like a big hat. And I'd be like, see that guy? That guy's fucking like that guy's boat. And then you turn around the corner, people. Right? That's my people. You turn the corner and there'd be like some slob family from, you know, Slob County, USA that's wearing like, you know,
Guns N' Roses t-shirts
and, you know, everyone's got an iPad or whatever, and you're just like, fuck you guys, you're ruining my vibe. Well, I took my boat vibe here, and I I modified it a little bit for Jamaica, and I feel like it worked. I achieved it. Really, if you ever watched like Mad Men, when like Don Draper would go to California every once in a while and just like hang around by the pool, that was what I was shooting for, and I feel like I did a good job. I achieved it. I achieved my goal. The from a musical standpoint, the one thing that I thought was totally fucking delightful, well, I guess first of all, we land the main highway out of the airport area in Negril is like Jimmy Cliff Boulevard or Jimmy Cliff Parkway or something like that, which was just nice to see. But then we're on this bus to the resort, and I'm like I recognize every third song that's coming on the radio in here, and I don't know all that much.
It's Bob Marley.
No, that wasn't it. Right,
Jimmy because Buffett.
No, fuck Jimmy Buffett.
Because you have a Trojan Scott box set.
Well, that's the thing, right? So of course, there is Bob Marley everywhere, right? It's inescapable. But one of the things that I became absolutely obsessed with when I was like a young ska punk kid, coming out of the 90s, trying to, because I think all of us that were ska punk kids in like 1998, you got to a certain point where you were either going to go down the road of total goofball ska, or you were going to try to like achieve some sort of ska respectability by tracing the roots of it, right? So I don't know what the goofball ska road is, or the stereotypical band is, but you know,
I'm gonna say it's Real Big Fish.
Well, I feel like Real Big Fish is where we all started. Like, we started with those kind of bands because we were just like young and dumb and wanted to sing, you know, fun songs about beer. But at a certain point, you start consuming more Real Big Fish, or like the Real Big Fish inspired bands, or you go the route of, you know, getting into the Slackers and getting into Hepcat and then getting into the Two Tone stuff and then getting into what John said, the Trojan stuff and the you know, all this original stuff. Well, if you're going down that original road, the one thing that you run into, because it is like a gigantic cultural artifact, is the soundtrack to The Harder They Come, which, you know, was a movie in the 60s or 70s? Was it The Harder They Come?
The Harder They Come is like 1973, something like that.
Yeah. So it's ostensibly a Jimmy Cliff record in that he plays, say, the majority of the songs on that. But there's a handful of other artists that are on there as well. And, you know, but like an all of note, and especially of note to like the punk world. Like, so, you know, the original version of, say, like Pressure Drop that the Clash famously covered, and that's how I knew the song, was on there and things like that. Right. So like every third song that's coming on the radio is feels like something from The Harder They Come. And, you know, occasionally something from those old Trojan ska box sets. And like, it's like, I absolutely heard just like, you know, piping in over the PA by the pool bar at some point, you know, the original version of like, say like Tide Is High, or again, Pressure Drop, or, you know, Sweet and Dandy, or like any of those songs from like that, from that soundtrack and that era. And it kind of blew my mind, and it blew my mind in the from the standpoint of like wow, I didn't realize how much of a linchpin that record, I guess, and that set of music was to I guess that early reggae universe. But more so than that, just that it hadn't been replaced by anything, at least as far as like the people, you know, book scheduling music on the resorts and stuff like that, right? You know, there's been a million modern, you know, reggae artists and dancehall artists and everything like that, but that had not crept in very much to the background noise music that we heard the whole time, or at least the stuff that I was picking out. And it was nice, because I love that record, and I still love those songs. So just to, like, to hear them all week long, just soundtrack of my life, was just great. So yeah, So that was cool. So now, all right. So do you want to, before I get off this topic, do you want to hear how easy or hard it was to acquire drugs in Jamaica, or my problem with millennials?
Drugs. Or both. Actually, millennials. I bet it's very easy to acquire marijuana in Jamaica, even though it's actually much more illegal than it is in the United States and Canada. Weed's legal now, but I would say very easy. So tell me why you hate millennials, because I can't stand them either.
Okay, well, this isn't hate, because I feel like I deserve some hate for how I what I started talking about in this situation with us. So actually, I'll tell you both. So we get there, it's raining, because it is the rainy season in May and June there, which all that means is that, you know, if you look at a forecast before you go down there, it is just this terrifying vacation forecast where it's like every day is thunderstorm. But all that means in reality is that it will have like a tropical shower from like 2 to 4 in the afternoon, which is sort of at the point in the day where you're drunk and want to go take a nap anyways. So that, you know, totally fine. The rain did not bother me. It also meant that, like, but because it was a rainy season, I guess, and maybe because we were in the grill and it was far from the airport, the resort we were at was like a third full. So it was super chill. Like no one was moving too fast. And all everyone that worked there was just fucking wonderful. And they, you know, no one seemed stressed out or, you know, over anything. Everyone was just chill, which was great. No, we got there in the rain, let's say like, I don't know, 2 in the afternoon or so. We put our bags in our room and we're like, well, let's go take a little walk and see what the beach looks like and all that. And we stroll down onto the beach. There's no one on the beach because it was just been raining, or it was raining. The first human being that we see walks up, kind of like gives you the fist bump, and he's like, I'm Farmer Joe. And I'm like, hey, Farmer Joe. So me and Farmer Joe walk to a tree that is between the resort that we're at and the neighboring resort. Also next to the tree, and under the tree, in fact, is the security booth where the two security guards at the resort are sitting there. And standing there next to the security guards, we buy like half an ounce of weed from Farmer Joe. It was the first human being that we encountered. So yes, that's I guess how easy it is. We at one point,
did you smoke it in public, Adam? That's the question.
Yeah, we smoked it on our. I mean, we smoked it on our the balcony of our room, and we smoked it. We smoked it on the beach, but like not like in people's faces on the beach. We would actually like take all the chairs had these chair coverings on them, which would also float, so you could like bring them out and float in the ocean. So we'd like bring the float things out into the ocean and just like float around and smoke a joint in the sun, which was super cool. We at one point are on a catamaran cruise. There was a little boat tour. It was one of the included things in the resort that just like took you out for a couple hours. It was just another excuse to drink, but it took you out for a couple hours and went around the coast so that you could like see the sunset in a interesting place. And it brings you in and lets you go swimming in this cave. There's a cave that's on the side of the hill in downtown Negril where they actually filmed some of the underwater scenes in 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. So in there, we're going out to this cave thing on this boat. So my wife and I are sitting there on the back of the boat, and we're looking around and, you know, taking in the sights, sitting in the sun. And then one of the guys in the boat walks over and he's like, you know, he's like, hey, why don't you come sit on the other side of the boat? And we're like, oh yeah. Okay. He's like, yeah, you'll like it over there. It's nice. So we're like, okay. So we get up and we go to the other side of the boat, and we realize that he moved us over to the other side of the boat because we were sitting with all of the old people. And somehow the boat had like stratified of these like 30 people that were on this boat. All of the olds were at the back of the boat, and then all of like the young honeymooner people were at the front. So this guy saw us, who are neither of those. We're not one of these like resort boomers, and we're not, you know, a 20-something honeymooning couple. But they're like, ooh, look at those out of place mid-30s people. They're sitting with all the olds. That's sad. Let's move them. So they moved us to the front where all the young people were, and we didn't realize that for a while. But we're like, it's like there's a decidedly different vibe all of a sudden. So we're talking to some of these young people, and we hit it off with them. We actually hit it off with them because it turns out everybody knew Farmer Joe. And we started to see a few of these couples around, at dinner and stuff like that. And we're sitting there having drinks with them the one night. And the one guy is wearing a Hawaiian shirt. We're sitting at a bar later. And he keeps adjusting his shirt a little bit, you know, like straightening it out, you know, making sure it's nice and presentable. He's like playing with his shirt a lot. And clearly like trying to draw some attention to it. And I'm like, I don't get it. And then finally he's just like, well, what do you think of my shirt? Now I'm thinking, here is a kindred spirit because this man is trying to be boat right now, right? He is on a Caribbean resort and he's fucking dressing like he's at a Caribbean resort. And I respect this, but no, he was wearing, it was a floral patterned Hawaiian shirt, but among the floral patterns were
pot leaves.
That at least would be like the kind of like corny goofiness that I was expecting. No, it was Rick and Morty. Right. Right now, I'm like, it's Rick and Morty. He's just like, yeah. And I'm like, and clearly this was like meant to be like a conversation lead in, like, let's talk about Rick and Morty. And I'm just like,
stance on Rick and Morty.
I'll tell you my stance. I'll tell you what I told him. I go, that's that cartoon that there's a lot of memes about on the internet. And like, you could see like the color drains out of his face. And he's like, you've never watched Rick and Morty.
And mumbling, I'm like, something Canadians.
He was mumbling like old people. Like, I've been conned. These people are actually old, right? And part of me is thinking like I have two young kids. I haven't watched shit that they don't want to watch.
Can't watch cartoons with cursing. Yeah. I feel that, dude. I had a decade where I didn't watch anything good.
Right. And I'm like, I'm aware that it's a thing, but like, at what point in my life am I going to go find time to go binge watch some fucking show just because the internet tells me I should? Like, it's not going to happen. Not going to happen right now. First season was
pretty good.
I'm like, when I am 50 and retired, I will go watch all your cartoons. But anyways, though. So, but then the most millennial.
50 and retired.
I don't know.
That is optimistic.
Isn't it? That's probably so wrong. But then the most millennial thing happened is that I've got like a little Raspberry Pi computer that's up in our room that has like the whole series on it. Like, we go up there and check it out. You guys want to go watch some?
Who is this guy, Adam?
He was such a nice guy. But I'm like, no.
Go out to my room, get a little loose, smoke some weed.
What's the thing? I'm all for like, you know, hanging out at this pool bar, listening to Jimmy Cliff songs and like abusing substances with you and drinking as much of these sugar bomb rum drinks as possible. But I do not want to go watch a cartoon on a computer that you should not have brought with you. Because that is like as antithetical to my whole life philosophy this week. Like, this is, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to answer a punk news question from Greg Simpson on my phone when I happen to look at it like an idiot. I don't want to watch Rick and Morty on your thing. No, I don't want to turn on my TV. Like, this is we should take a stand here and not do these things. And you know, he looked at me like I was a crazy person, and I thought, ah, millennials, crazy people. I understand now. I understand that I'm actually one of the olds. But then I somehow later in the evening went further, and I feel like he had the same impression of me, where we had gone to a different bar, which is to say that we had gone to the bar that was on the other side of the pool at one point than the bar that we were at that was on the other side of the pool. So we'd gone to a different bar and we were getting more drinks, and we're quite further into our revelry at this point. And somehow the music, the fact that I write about music on the internet and have for a number of years comes up in conversation. And they're, you know, that I don't know about you guys, when you talk about like, oh, I write about music with people that are not like in the that don't associate their lifestyle with music, it's always weird because I never know what their angle is, because like inevitably it's always like the question that comes out of them is like, what's your favorite band? And I'm like, what? Like that is not a thought that occurs to me. Like I have a complex and tortured relationship with many artists, and I don't know if I want to consider any of them my favorite. That seems like not the way I want to think about this. But somehow I, like a drunk idiot, spin what's your favorite band to, oh, I want to start this nascent cassette label, and then I'm fucking talking about cassettes. Just rattling off all of the weird
full hipster in your boat clothes and cassette label talk.
Yeah, I'm just talking about cassettes, and then I can see it on him and his wife's face, and they're giving me the exact same look that I was giving them when they were trying to talk to me about Rick and Morty, which was this just like, you know, like, who the fuck is this guy and what universe does he come from? And I'm just like, oh fuck, I did it. I somehow did something that stuck a pin in me that said, this person clearly exists in and of this decade, and you cannot take him out of it.
Which is but actually, Adam, cassettes are young people, like really young people thing, like 18, 19, 20.
Nah, but like it's really young people thing if you're the counterculture, the counterculture music,
kids,
right?
John, not the mainstream.
Yeah, not
the counterculture kids.
Not the nice young newlywed couple that just wants to watch the Rick and Morty. I mean, they're not the cassette people. And I'm like, oh, I brought cassettes into this, and I'm like, I fucked it up. It struck me that you know, I was.
Well, the good news is the relationship broke down at that point, which is what you really need to happen anyway. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, like, why do you want to talk to people, Adam?
Well, I ran into a guy at a graduation party this week, and who referred to himself as a rock and roll historian.
I hope you punched.
So I knew I was in trouble, and then he started, we started talking a little about it, and my daughter or somebody told him that I'd write a little bit and blah, blah, blah. And he started talking about how much he was into punk. And at this point he says, one band I'm into, I don't know if you ever heard of them. They're called NoFX. And I'm just like, okay, this is not going to, this conversation is not going to end well, you know? And he kept referring to himself as a punk and also how he loved to go to EDM festivals. And I'm just like, someone please kill me now.
Well, oh. The thing is, like, I never want to be like I try not to be snobby, and I like.
I try not to be either. But when you run into some of these people, you're just like, you know what?
But just yeah, like I find like all of a sudden I've like I cannot have a conversation with a person that is on the periphery of music, and is but like and it doesn't I don't know doesn't think about it 17 times an hour, right? Like. It's just like the point of, I don't know, like your touch points are so different that like he totally threw me with like who's your favorite band, and I'm like I don't know, like I haven't thought about that question since, and again, this is gonna sound snobby.
I can give you a list of 15 that I feel like would define
But then my answer just gets assholey. I'm like I can give you a few bands per era that I still like, you know, slash, but a lot of them I now have a difficult relationship with because of this or that or the other, like, or you know, oh, you know, I can give you a list
I'm half less than Jake, half Dirty Nil, like that's just who I am.
Like what I mean, do
that,
I?
That's who you are, Adam. Like,
when you talk to people that like are into music but like not don't eat and breathe, like someone might say like, hey, it's like, oh, I love David Bowie. And I'm like, oh, really? What's your favorite issue of the CD? RCA, EMI, or the new ones on their Parlophone? And they're like, I've got his greatest hits. You know what I mean?
I like that one where he's an astronaut.
Yeah. It's like it really there really is a wall. I mean.
Yeah, there's a wall of obsession, you know, but the fact of the matter is you have to acknowledge in yourself that you're obsessed. And like I said, to somebody at a random grad party, NoFX is an underground band. to them, you know. This is a band that not many people have heard of, and they're barely aware of their music. But to us, those of us who really do spend way too much time wallowing in this crap, it's like, ugh. It's like, you know, it's like being a heavy metal fan, but not knowing anything beyond Metallica or something, you know?
Yeah. And, but the other thing is like, I want that to be okay. Like I want to, you know, if you,
yeah, it's fine. Like, it's fine.
Like,
yeah,
I don't want to judge these people because of that, but it's just that like,
you should.
But I have like retarded my ability to have a normal conversation about this stuff. Like in the same way that like, I can't have a water cooler conversation about music with someone that is not similarly fucked up by it as I have
ever,
been.
Have you ever done that thing like where someone starts talking about a band and it's clear you know way more than they do, so you try to like act like you don't know as much as you do just to have like a human interaction? Have you ever done that?
Probably. I mean, I don't know. I've suppressed all these things.
I've had enough human interactions in my life. So Adam, on the boat, right? The old people were in the back and the young people in the front. What was the cutoff? Where would I have had to sit? What was the age cutoff approximately?
Tom, there was actually a person that was wandering around that I swear to God was your doppelganger. And it was very unnerving. Dude,
all big ball guys look the same.
It was unnerving. He had a little bit more of a insane Guy Fieri facial hair thing happening.
Yes.
But it was like, I turned
that singer from Smash Mouth.
I'd turn and I'd see this guy and just be like, wow, there's Tom again. Jesus Christ.
He's stalking me down in Jamaica.
Tom, you would be in my boat. You would be in the same situation, I think, as me there, in that you're not.
I wouldn't try to blend in. I don't think, Adam. You're like doing the boat thing. I don't think I would do that. I think I'd still be walking around like a Poison Idea T-shirt, but.
Well, okay.
I'm not judging you. Do what you want.
No, well, see, here's a good question then. So the Poison Idea T-shirt is one thing. I'm going to ask you two, as Americans, what is the mindset of this? So there was, first of all, just to set the stage.
Welcome to the Adam's Vacation episode of the Punk News Podcast.
Whatever. You know, no
effect. We'll be playing Jimmy Cliff.
We will. No effects is playing at a festival somewhere, whatever.
A beer festival with $10 craft beers.
Yeah, yeah. Do people want to hear about no effects playing a beer festival with $10 craft beers or me drinking a lot of Red Stripe in the sun? That's what they want to hear about.
Smoking thumb-sized joints with your lovely bride.
Probably just like horrible brown field weed from the... Okay, so...
Hey, Price is Right.
I'm going to get off.
Hey, Adam, was weed cheap or expensive in Jamaica?
Oh, this was one of the weirdest things.
Expensive for white people.
It was cheaper. It was expensive for white people, but it was also cheaper. But it was also the Jamaicans had this strange, like, trusting nature with regards to money that we couldn't quite figure out. So we went in. And I'm like, I want half an ounce of this. And he quotes me a price. And I've been told like the first three people that offer you weed in Jamaica, like walk away because it's so plentiful that you can afford to shop around. But we're there like, you know,
what a wonderful country.
He gave me a price and I was just like, you know, like, no, I'm not going to do that. You know, and he brought it down by. He knocked it down by like at least a third of whatever that he was wanted to charge me. And it got to the point where it was like, it would have been, yeah, significantly cheaper than buying that quantity here officially. So I'm like, yeah, you know what? I'm down to pay that. I could probably get it cheaper by wandering around, but you know, I brought some money with the intention of using it for this purpose. And this is well within my budget. So I'm down. Give me the drugs. Right. But you know, he quotes me like a certain amount and I'm like, well, like, I don't have that in my wallet right now. I have, you know, $20 less than that. So, you know, now I'm hoping I can be like, you know, knock another 20 off this. And we're
so you're trying to like negotiate.
Gotcha. But I was hoping it would become a negotiation tactic, but it was the truth. Like I didn't have like, I didn't like what we came. It was like, what the fuck was it? It was like. I don't know. He was looking for 80 and I had 60 or something like that. Right. Whatever it was.
That's a lot of weed, Adam.
It was a lot. We had like two big joints.
He's on vacation, John. Stop.
It was a lot. It was the most, anyways. So I didn't have it on me. So
they were smoking joints the size of Chipotle. Dude.
He just gives me everything
every time.
And he's like, that's okay. Just take it all, you know, bring me the 20. And I'm like, okay. So I take the product and I give him what I got and we're walking away. And on the one hand, I'm like, you know, I am, you know, we're talking about it a lot on the podcast, but like I am by any means a novice smoker, right? So I'm like, this is the most like single amount of weed I have ever like held in my hands at a given time, right? So I'm very happy about this, and I'm like, dude, just like was like, just you know,
he feels like Al Pacino in Scarface.
Well, no, I'm thrown by this like this
bag of weed.
I'm thrown by this just like, oh, just come back at some point and give me $20 thing. Where I'm like, is he expecting me to give him $20, or is that sort of just like a, you know, his way of ending the negotiation at my price but saving some face. Like is he like he's expecting me to
give him the $20? I hope
so. I wander back to the room, and I put down my big bag of weed, and I grab $20, and I'm like, I guess I'm gonna go give this guy $20. Now he is not on my resort, right? He's like down the beach and like on the border of this resort and the next resort. Like I could theoretically never see this person again in my life, and I'm like, but. Whatever.
Or like, theoretically, your wife could wake up one morning with your severed head in her bed next right? to her.
So I'm like,
you just don't know.
I wasn't thinking like, ooh, can I get away with ripping this guy off? It was more that like, does he expect me to actually come back and give him $20, or was that just like the way that this negotiation was supposed to end? But whatever. So I take my 20 and I wander back down there, and you know, and I go and I find him, and he's not standing there waiting for me with his arms crossed or anything, but he's hanging around, right? But he was hanging around anyways. I wander over and I hand it to him, and I'm like, and as I hand it to him, I'm like, am I an honest guy or am I a sucker? And I give it to him, and he's like, you're an honest guy, man. He like gives me like a hug or something, right? Like he's like, I don't fucking know. All these people were lovely to deal with, so whatever. I'm not sure.
Adam, did you buy one of those green and yellow and red knit hats?
No, because that seems like culturally offensive, does it not? Like, are you not, is that the equivalent of wearing like a Native American headdress like a kind headdress. Of thing? No, okay, but here.
I don't care. I wouldn't wear either. I'm just curious.
Did it have the fake dreadlocks already stitched into it?
Yeah, yeah. How can I offend your lovely culture in as many ways as I can? Okay,
it was made in China, and it had "Don't worry, be happy" written on it.
Ooh. No, okay, Americans, answer me this question. There were now, for some reason, setting the stage, there were a lot of Southern U.S. people at this resort,
and Southern.
I don't know, like. There was a lot of people that were either from like, I don't know, like Alabama or Georgia or Texas or Tennessee or like Northern Florida. Like they all had that accent, uh-huh. that
I'm going to rape you accent.
I don't want to call it that because that would be, you know, but you can. but a lot of them did. Right. I did not.
They said things like, you got a pretty mouth, boy.
I mean,
things like that.
Maybe all of the non heavily accented Americans just all faded into the background. But I do not recall meeting a single person who is from, I don't know, Boston or Minneapolis or Seattle or like anywhere else, right? It was all south, 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 south. And I don't know what it is about, if it's something about Jamaica or whatever, right? But they were all like super south. And there was definitely dudes that would show up at the buffet in the morning. And they weren't wearing a Poison Idea t-shirt. But they were wearing, say, a black t-shirt with no sleeves that had a big black and white American flag in the middle of it. And then under the American flag was written like, love it or leave it. Or something like that.
You're painting a caricature, Adam.
And I'm looking at this guy. And I'm like, this seems like overly aggressive as a clothing choice. We're like, it's not like we're in.
But that's perception. Was he ever overly aggressive with you? Southerners are generally very friendly.
No, I've always had that impression too, is that they are. But this dude is basically wearing one of these t-shirts that's sort of like fuck you. Is essentially what the t-shirt is screaming, right? Like you know, respect the flag or fuck off, one of these guys, right? And I'm like I mean, I could get if we were in, you know, I don't know, Houston and having breakfast somewhere and you're walking around in this shirt. But I'm like, we're not in America right now. So what are you trying to project by your like overly aggressive fuck you America shirt? Or do they not even realize that they're wearing this? It's just a shirt to them, but I'm seeing it and going,
dude, they're like $4 they're like $4 at Walmart. It's not really a
do you get one just of those when you file your taxes? Like, how does that I don't know. Is that weird, or is that just me looking at it as a Canadian and saying that is weird?
I think you might have a certain elitist eye, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know. You might maybe got a bunch of hillbillies around you. Well, listen, that's in every state. I know there's people like that in Pennsylvania. There's certainly people like that in Michigan. These are not backwoods states, you know. But it's just a certain like sub part of America, and they're friendly people generally, even if I don't think they're meaning to be like scary and oppressive with their clothing choices or the fact that they talk like MMA fighters.
Yeah, it just threw us. It was just one of these things where you walk around the corner, you're like, see that guy? Like that guy ain't very boat right now. Holy shit, that guy is.
I see, like I said, I think the boat thing, I don't think I could do that either. I think I'd still be a little bit Dickies, shorts, black t-shirt kind of a thing going on. I don't know, maybe I could. I've bought a couple of like sort of middle-aged resorty shirts lately at my wife's behest, so maybe I could do it eventually, but I don't know.
I mean, I don't want to go overboard with this. I wasn't wearing like a fucking captain's hat or anything, but
he was dressed exactly like Thurston Howell the Third. So when the minnow got lost, he had a captain's hat, like an ascot, a navy blue jacket, probably a lot of gold jewelry.
There's a rapper called Thurston Howell, which I think is a great name for a rapper.
So anyways, I've monopolized a good half hour of this show, so I feel very like personally fulfilled right now. But what the fuck did you guys do?
If by half hour you mean 45 minutes, Adam?
Yeah, exactly.
Why don't you play one of your reggae songs while I go get another beer, and then one of us can tell a story of our
with the remaining 7 minutes that we have.
Well, exactly. No, we got to talk about something boring.
There was no news worth talking about this week anyway. John and I last time, Adam, without you, John and I just basically rapped the whole time, and I thought it was one of my favorite episodes.
Oh, so good. So I should post
through the format.
I should post it, I guess.
I guess.
All right.
Maybe people hate it, but I enjoyed it, didn't you, John? I thought it was fun, freewheeling.
Tom, any time I could hang out with you, I enjoy it.
Well, anytime we don't have to have the Canadian telling 45-minute stories about his, looking down on all Americans.
I'm just saying, you got to know.
I do not own anything salmon-colored, I must admit, Adam. It's just too close to pink.
Do you own a shirt that expresses, if not America... Then no. There will be fists.
No, I don't. The only thing I have with the American flag on, I have a pair of the old early 90s Converse flag shoes that are pretty sweet. I don't think they fit anymore, though. Even my feet have gotten fatter.
But, so anyways, here's a song from the Heart of the Come soundtrack from 1971. This is The Slickers with Johnny Too Bad.
Ratchet in your waist, Johnny, you're too bad. Oh, One of these days, Vinny, you're a bicycle. Be gonna run. One of these days, Vinny, you're a bicycle.
Back the curtain a little bit here. When Tom said he wanted to go get a beer, that implies that we're actually going to play a song for 3 minutes, but we don't do that. We pause for like 2 seconds and then we keep going. So what do we do now, John? We gotta wait for Tom.
Let's talk about the Slickers. Of course, Slickers famously only ever actually recorded one album. Johnny Too Bad was a single on the Heart of It Comes soundtrack, but they actually re-recorded that song along with I think 8 other amazing songs and released it as called the Slickers? It was released under a couple of different names. The album produced by Lee Scratch Perry. That is the re-recording of Johnny Too Bad, produced or at least engineered by Lee Scratch Perry, not the original version. Amazing reggae album, somewhat hard to find. But if you come, maybe it's called In the City. If you come across the Slickers only album, get it. It is a landmark reggae album. But Adam, here's the question. Sublime famously covered By the Rivers of Babylon. And of course, By the Rivers of Babylon is basically a song about, it's sung from the perspective of a slave being captured from Africa and being forced to work on a plantation. Adam, what's your stance on Sublime? Three white guys, or three mostly white guys, although they did have a Hispanic drummer, but that's not black, obviously, playing a song about, written by people of an African background, singing about being sold into slavery and how the slave master says, sing me a song because you're happy people. And the song is actually a sad song, but the slave master doesn't realize it. What's your perspective of Sublime covering that song?
It seems a little bit culturally tone deaf, but this was the 90s, so we could be culturally tone deaf, I guess. I feel like we get more pushback on doing that kind of thing now. I mean, in a way, I mean, it does sort of slice in with one of the stories that we did want to talk about this week. So maybe we just will just like do this story right now while we're waiting for Tom to get his beer.
I got my beer.
We're doing this story right now anyways. It'll take 2 seconds because it's just telling people that it exists. And that is that Tim Armstrong and members of the Interrupters got together with the Calypso icon, Calypso Rose, and they released a cover of, I guess, of the hymn "Amazing Grace," which is all which sounds, I don't know. Whenever I hear "Amazing Grace," I have very bad church flashbacks, and it is a song that I've always thought is overwrought and dreary, even from a, you know.
Oh, you think? I disagree. It's a favorite of that type of standard for me, that type of song.
No, see, it seems overwrought and dreary to me because, like,
you were raised Catholic, right?
I was raised Catholic, yeah. No, but it...
Did they sing that? They sing that at Catholic church?
Yeah, but like they murdered it, right?
Oh, like, just like all minor key organ
music. Yeah, yeah. So it's one of those songs that was like simultaneously boring church music, and I never wanted to be in church, but also a song I knew from outside of church just because it's a popular song in the universe.
Dude, once you hear the Dropkick Murphys version, it'll never make you sad again.
And I was just like, I'm like, so this is both a cliche. And it's horrible so I approached this video with some trepidation, because it is not normally a song that I would go subject myself to for those reasons, but like a fun hoppin' calypso version of Amazing Grace, with someone as charismatic as Calypso Rose, who's got to be like, she's pretty fucking old at this point, right?
She's about 80.
Right? Where she has this, like, this little old grandma vibe, but she's just, like, kicking it this whole song. It is kind of delightful. I have no idea what I don't know what the background is behind this. Like, it's a
coach. You know what? Yeah, well, I was gonna say, you know what the irony of this is? John Newton, the guy who wrote Amazing Grace is, I'm gonna guess, about 250 years old, but maybe even older than that. Was written by a slave trader, believe it or not, a well-known slave trader who had this conversion experience, and he wrote this hymn about it. And Amazing Grace, how sweet the sound that saved a wretch like me. He actually had a great deal of guilt about his previous life before he had the conversion. Yeah, it's an interesting story. But anyway.
Yeah, so
it kind of ties back to what we were talking about before. That's why I mentioned it.
Well, no, that's why we brought it up right now, right? And the version that's on here with Tim and them is actually like, it's super fun. I was worried just like with it, when seeing it described to me before actually sitting down and listening to it, that it was going to somehow be what John was just describing with Sublime there, where it was going to be like Tim Armstrong up front and center and
like mumbling.
Well, like them taking this song that has, like, you know, all sorts of cultural ties to the slave trade and stuff like that, and
maybe one of the most recorded songs of all time, most recorded song of all time.
And goof, but I was worried they were going to take it and goof on it in a way.
He does this thing where he's half a note behind the beat, and he's like, it sounds like he's trying to jump on a train or something.
Yeah, right. And I'm like, oh, that's not what I want. But this is like Calypso Rose is front and center. This is her song and her performance. Like, Tim is fucking playing guitar and not making it about him. And it's both like tasteful and it's fun. They knock all of my preconceptions of dreariness out of this. So it's a cool cover. I'm cool with it. John, are you cool with it? Do you hate
Calypso Rose? I wish I would have listened.
I am cool with it. I wonder why is Coachella putting this out? There's a lot to unpack here in that. So the song was written by a white guy. However, I think it is most famous due to renditions by the African American community. Tom, would you agree with that?
I don't know about that.
Really?
I doubt you could find a more covered song.
Fair enough. But then you got Tim Armstrong, a punk rocker, singing a song that is as religious as it gets. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing.
But it's a standard, too. I mean, it's a standard. You know what I mean? It's not.
I don't know if that gets you, quote, off the hook. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing that Tim Armstrong is recording this. I'm just saying there's a lot to unpack there. And so it could be Tim Armstrong saying, I'm a punk and I'm a religious guy. Could be Tim Armstrong saying, I'm appreciating the inner beauty of this track.
I wouldn't look into it too much at all.
I feel that like this is something that I've grappled with
through the songs he records. Your head will explode because he recorded like a song a day for a year. You know what I mean? He just kind of does whatever. I think I don't think it's as thought out as you probably are intimating.
Well, no, but this is actually it's something that I've knocked around a lot. Like having come from a religious upbringing at some point, I'm always uneasy when I see religious music show up in my secular universe, and I don't know. I feel
why are you afraid? You're afraid you're gonna like convert, reconvert.
I don't know. Like I feel that there's something that like I steadfastly rejected, and like it and I live on either sides of the universe right now, and when we don't intertwine. So when Greg Graffin from Bad Religion went and recorded his couple bluegrass records that he put out, he went and he took like a lot of old, you know, bluegrass standards that were like spirituals and put them on there. And he played them straight. He didn't like snark them up, which I guess would be worse, right? But he didn't make them do anything dicky with the songs or anything like that. He played them straight. Now, from a maturity standpoint, he's looking at it and saying, you know, this is a classic piece of music in the style. I'm comfortable enough with the person I am and the way that like the universe sees me that I can perform this song and it doesn't have to mean anything. And then he's playing it. And I think that's the way to do it.
Bad Religion did an album of Christmas songs.
Right.
The majority of which were Christian songs.
And I was just about to bring that up in that I have never brought myself to listen to it.
If you want to listen to a Christmas album once a year, that's all right.
I don't want to listen to a Christmas album in the first place, and not for religious reasons, but just
get the twist. It's just your Christmas album, really good.
But there's something where the hair on the back of my neck stands up, and I don't know how to do this.
I actually totally get that, but and that was the case for me probably 20 years ago, but it's just not like that anymore. You just realize that the world's everything's not separate. Everything is everything is in the same plane, you know? And so it doesn't really bother me. I don't know that I'd go out of my way for it, but it doesn't give me that reaction anymore, but it did at one point. So maybe you'll get past it at some point.
We don't know. Anyways, though, you're back. You got a beer. Why don't you tell us about what you did? Please take 45 minutes since I've set that as the standard. I'm so sorry.
I mean, I, you know me. I'm a Midwesterner. A few words. I can sum my whole experience up in like 3 minutes. But so this weekend was the Camp Anarchy down in Thornville, Ohio, or something like that, down by Columbus, which is the second year they've done it. Last year was called Punk and Drublic, but make no mistake about it, it's the same thing. After the NoFX controversy or fake controversy, I think they rebranded it. So it was a pretty cool lineup. I don't have it right in front of me, but they had a lot of good bands playing. But I'm not a camper. I went camping last year and did it, and I had fun, and I met some really nice people. And I had some nice experiences and saw some great sets, but you know, it's a typical festival type thing where you're watching, you know, the Damned play at 5 PM and you're standing out in this field made up of like baby skull sized rocks. And that's what Camp Anarchy is. It's the most bizarre infield I've ever seen. They have these giant rocks. I've never stood anything like it.
What a weird system of measurement.
Well, baby skulls. It's an American thing.
Is this like a Danzig thing? Is like, is that yes, how exactly. you guys in the Danzig Facebook group measure everything in baby skulls? Exactly.
Like, this thing was like three baby skulls. You should have seen it. But no. So anyway, I went last year. I really wasn't too interested in going this year. But the thing with these festivals that's cool is it gets a lot of bands moving through the Midwest. So I went to Chicago to see some of the bands that were going to be playing at Camp Anarchy. And I originally had intention to hang out quite a bit with our frequent podcast listener and sometimes contributor Liverpool Neil, but he had a little issue and I wasn't able to hang out with him too much. We did go out one day a little bit, but so a buddy and I ended up going down there. And on Thursday night before Camp Anarchy, we went and saw the Damned and X at the House of Blues in Chicago.
Nice.
So John, you saw Damned at Punk Rock Bowling, I assume. I mean, I assume that's a must see, right?
What you want me to talk about it or?
Well, I'm just confirming that you saw them.
Indeed, I did, Thomas.
Have you seen the modern version of the Damned recently or no? I mean, have you seen the Damned recently until then?
I've seen the Damned 5 times, Thomas.
And how recently? Like last couple of years?
Well, actually, about 4 or 5 months ago, they played Philadelphia.
Okay, so
maybe like 7 months ago.
This recently. They were doing the entire Machine Gun Etiquette album, which is how they started their. I mean, X was great. X played a weird set. Like they didn't play like a greatest hit set. I'm working on writing all this stuff. So those of you who read the site as well as listen to the podcast, we'll get to read my description of it. But X was good. I enjoyed it. They played kind of a weird set. It wasn't like necessarily a greatest hit set. They certainly played what you'd call a lot of the greatest hits, but they also kind of indulged a little bit. But then the Dam came on. It was pretty late. It was pushing 10 o'clock, I think, which for a Thursday night is pretty late, I would think. House of Blues is... Have you been to a House of Blues, John? My second question.
I have not, Thomas.
They have those up by... They have those up by you, Adam? Probably not.
I've been to one House of Blues, and it was like 10 years ago at Punk Rock Bowling. It was the one at the Mandalay Bay, so I don't know.
Oh, in Vegas.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, they're nice enough, but they're essentially building this new construction, and they'll try to make it look like something old, you know, that typical type of thing. But the House of Blues in Chicago is right downtown in the most yuppified part of Chicago, where I will tell you, if you want to feel old and poor and unattractive, it is a really good place to hang out because everybody there is young and beautiful and seems to have unlimited cash. But anyway, so the X were good, and then the Dam came out about 10. They played the whole Machine Gun Etiquette album, and then they played for an hour plus after that. And I got to tell you, it was one of the best shows I've seen in forever.
Right.
So good. They looked great. They sounded great. They Captain Sensible is a real charismatic, you know, for a guitar player, is a real charismatic guy. That keyboard player is fun to watch. And of course, Dave Vanian, I mean, he sounds amazing. He looks amazing too, but I'm sure he's, you know, I'm sure he goes through black hair dye, like, you know, like you wouldn't believe, but he looks great and he sounded great. And the whole band was so good. I was just astounded. It was the most pleasant surprise. You know, I didn't even know all the material. I really only know their really early material, but man, was it good. I'm sure at Punk Rock Bowling is the same thing, but if you're watching them outside, it's just such a different experience, you know, as opposed to in a darker club with the lights and all that. But yeah, it was amazing. It was great. And then on Friday night was a real juxtaposition, actually, because we went to Reggie's, which is another great, great club on the south side of downtown Chicago, which I've been to many, many times to see shows. And TSOL played in like their very small room, which is supposed to be like a 110 capacity or something. I suspect it was probably closer to 200 people in there. And it was a different kind of show, but also really, really good, much more physical, much hotter, sweatier dive bar type show. So that's what I ended up doing. That was my Camp Anarchy experience. I got to shower every morning. I got to shit in like toilets that flush.
That's the way to do it, baby.
Hell yeah.
That's the high life.
And it was a really good time. I'm glad we went. We had a nice day. We had a nice time. We even went to a White Sox game the next day, and it was just nice. Me and my buddy went, and like I said, we got to hang out with Neil a little bit, and we had a good time. It was a real nice weekend. Not Camp Anarchy-ish, but I know I've said it 1,000 times, and I'll say it 1,000 times more. Those festivals are great places to see, you know, a bunch of bands, but are you really seeing them? You know, seeing a great band play at 2 o'clock in the afternoon in broad daylight with 8,000 people. It's just not for me. And I'm not a camper. So anyway, that was my weekend. Had a great time. I did not buy any weed. And what else didn't I do? I never dressed like a boat guy. But I'm not judging. And I didn't wear anything with American flag on it.
Well, you know,
so yeah, don't
one out of three.
Yeah, exactly. I drank a, you know, metric ton of beer and just had a good time. So John, tell us about Punk Rock Bowling. I've never been. It's like a bucket list thing for me.
Man,
and I just have not had a chance yet.
This year was, I've been to the Atlantic City. I've been to the Asbury Park Punk Rock Bowling, which is cool. The flag year was awesome, but I mean, Las Vegas Punk Rock Bowling was without question the best music festival I've ever been to.
Did you go to any club shows or did you only go?
Thomas.
Holy cow! You guys are going to talk 45 minutes each. I'm such a succinct storyteller. I'm cheating myself.
To pull back the curtain, Punk News used to sponsor Punk Rock Bowling, and we don't anymore. I'll just say it's because we felt as though we weren't they weren't as interested as having us as sponsors, and we were being sponsors. And my opinion has always been, if somebody doesn't want you at their party, then don't go to their party. And why would you want to be at their party? So we haven't sponsored Punk Rock Bowling for the past 2 years, I think it is. And it's a testament to how awesome and how well done it was this year that we're not a sponsor this year, and it was amazing. So let me tell you, I rolled into Las Vegas at about 11 a.m. on Friday. I had Enterprise rent a car, and everything was coming up, John. I mean, it was an amazing time. I had the $30 special Enterprise rent a car, which is, we give you whatever we have left over, you pay 30 bucks. Whatever piece of crap we've got, you take it. So I roll in, and the guy's like, all right, what car do you want? And I was joking. I'm like, how about that hopped up Dodge Charger? And he's like, I don't even care. Here you go. So for $30, yeah, I got this nice Dodge Charger. First place I go, I go to In-N-Out Burger, my first In-N-Out Burger in like 7 years, and it was amazing. Then I hit up Zia Records, which is a famous Las Vegas chain. Well, it's a famous chain. There's two in Las Vegas. Excellent CD selection. If you're familiar with Rasputin or Streetlight or Amoeba, it's almost as big CD selection as those guys. Excellent CD selection, vinyl selection, a lot of new records, nothing that interesting news, but I went crazy buying CDs. Then I rolled on over to El Cortez, and I booked this trip really late. I thought El Cortez would be like a total shithole. It was Tom and Adam. I had for $70 a day, I had three full rooms. I had the bedroom, the living room, kind of another room.
The thing with Las Vegas is even the plainer, cheaper hotels are so much nicer than your typical standard like chain hotel. Like I stay at, you know, Quality Inns or whatever all the time when I travel. The Vegas hotels are just they're nice. They have to compete, you know. I
highly recommend El Cortez. It was great. I'm not getting paid to say that. It was,
El Cortez. Is that on the strip? Where is that? Is it downtown?
Punk Rock Bowling. See, there's two strips in Vegas. There's the main strip and what's called the old strip, which is Fremont. Yeah. I had never been to Fremont Street. I'll get into that in a second. Fremont Street is popping. So anyways, yeah. El Cortez is actually one of the oldest hotels in Las Vegas, I think. It was awesome. It was so awesome. Mm. Cool thing about Punk Rock Bowling, everything is up and down Fremont Street. So it's about a six block walk, everything, right? Yeah. So I sleep for about an hour. I roll up. I go to the Golden Nugget. Black Dahlia is doing a 2-hour acoustic show, and he gets up there. He's like, I have no idea why they have me doing a 2-hour acoustic show. He's like, I have no idea why they have me doing 2 hours.
So did he play his own guitar, or somebody play guitar for him?
He played his own guitar, and he admitted that he's like, I don't really have a set list, and this is 2 hours, so we're just going to do what we can. He played a ton of Dwarves tracks. He played a ton of solo tracks. He played some stuff I've never even heard of before. He probably played about 50 songs, and it was awesome. It sounded great. He sounded great. It was just an awesome, awesome time. It was packed, right? I also ran into Susie Moon of with the Turbulent Hearts. Talked to her a little bit. Talked to Blag a little bit. Then it was 8 o'clock. So then I rolled on down to see World Inferno down at the Bunkhouse. It was World Inferno, Flipper, Killing Joke. World Inferno.
Oh, Killing. See, Killing. I'd like to see Killing Joke.
World Inferno was amazing. The band, it's basically a brand new band with like 2 or 3 people left over from the last iteration. And they were on fire. World Inferno was great. Flipper with David Yowan vocals was cool. Killing Joke was really cool. Though I gotta say, I think World Inferno blew him off stage. Meanwhile, so I go to the merch stand and like everybody's got all their stuff there. And this young lady, she's like, do you take credit cards? She's like, we take credit cards for everything except for this over here. And it was like a painting. And I'm like, well, what's that? She's like, it's a painting by Youth of Killing Joke. And I'm like, you mean he painted that? And it's like a gigantic painting. She's like, yep. I'm like, well, how much is it? She's like, it's $100, but we're willing to negotiate to the right buyer. And I'm like, well, what does that mean? She's like, it means we're willing to negotiate to the right buyer. I'm like, will you take 60? And she's like, yeah. So I bought a painting by Youth of Killing Joke for 60 bucks. It's this gigantic painting. It's called Bacchus. And I'm like, why are people all spending like $40 or $50 on records and t-shirts when you could have an original painting by Youth of Killing Joke? So I get this painting.
I'll tell you why I wouldn't buy it, because I don't have anywhere to hang. I don't have anywhere I'd be allowed to hang it.
So I've been to Las Vegas for like 12 hours. I've already been in and out an awesome record shop. I've seen Black Dag do a 2-hour acoustic show. I've seen World Inferno, and I bought a painting by Youth of Killing Joke. Oh, meanwhile, so I had to go from Golden Nugget down to Bunkhouse, which is walking down Fremont Street. Adam and Tom, you guys didn't really do senior week in high school, right?
I don't think so.
I don't know what that is.
in the East Coast, they do senior week, which is one of probably the 10 funnest times I've ever had in my entire life. Basically, after you graduate high school, everyone goes down the Jersey Shore. And it's literally a 7-day long party, and it's just so much fun. Like, all your friends are down the beach. You're just walking down the street. You run into all people you know. It's so much fun. Fremont Street was like that as an adult. I walked from Golden Nugget down to Bunkhouse. I was running into all these people I know. I ran into Drew Getz. I ran into the Ramones. I ran into Susie from Turbulent Hearts. I ran into all these people I know. And Fremont Street, it's like it's a nonstop party. I mean, it is crazy. So anyways, so I saw Killing Joke. Then I run up the street to Fremont Country Club that same night, and I see the Weirdos and the Dills. Weirdos.
Nice.
Like when you're
The Weirdos.
When you're an old punk band, there's two ways to do it. Basically, you can kind of just do your old set and do it 100% awesome, or you can do something totally different. The Weirdos, they sounded like they sounded in 1977, and it was they were amazing. Dills were a little bit different than I thought they were going to be. Their single was kind of more Stooges influence, but live they were actually almost kind of power pop, and it was cool. So I get to my place at about 4 a.m. I sleep till 7 a.m. About eight, so I wake up at about 7, so I've had about 4 hours of sleep across 2 days now. I roll on, I hit up some more record shops. I hit up Las Vegas Vinyl, which is okay. I hit up 11th Street Records, not that great. I hit up the other Z record shop, awesome CD selection, and I go to In-N-Out Burger. I come back, then I go to Ginger of the Drugettes is getting married, and Elvis was doing the wedding. So I went to an Elvis wedding, and it was awesome. I'm sorry. This is Saturday. So I come back from the CD shops. Then I go up to the Golden Nugget because World Inferno is doing a concert in their hotel room. So there's about 15 people in the hotel room, and World Inferno does a mini concert in their hotel room, which is awesome. Then I go to Punk Rock Bowling Proper. I see the Drugettes do the main stage, which was awesome. Then I kind of walked around the stalls. Then I saw Fear, and not only was it Fear, it was original Fear. It was like all the original guys except for Durf Scratch. Then the Damned played, and let me tell you, the Damned are really cool, and that the Damned do kind of have a chip on their shoulder, and that they're never rude or anything, but I think the Damned came to, you know, they're like, there's a lot of bands here, we're playing to win. And they went through all Machine Gun Etiquette in two tracks, and like Tom said, it was fast, but Vanian sounded amazing, Sensible sounded amazing, and they, I think they did have a chip on their shoulder that they wanted to be the best band. And like it was an amazing. I've seen the Damned 5 times now. Probably the best time I've ever seen them. And it was a short set, but it was awesome. And honestly, I think there's only one band that could have followed the Damned. And who would that be?
Flag.
Flag followed. I mean, luckily for everyone else, Flag followed it, and Flag definitely counted.
When I saw the Damned, John, they played almost 2 hours, hour and 50 minutes.
Kudos on you, Tom. I only got about
Right, or something.
I got 50 minutes here. No, 50 minutes.
Yeah, that's the thing with the festivals, too. It's always shorter sets, you know?
Right. And actually, a lot of the bands only have, like, 20-minute sets. And so it's like, that's cool, but also, like, what's the point, you know?
Especially when you get a band that's been around for 30 years and they get a half hour.
Sloppy Seconds got 20 minutes, you know?
No way.
Yeah, but we'll get to that in a second. So anyway, Flag was a Flag. I mean, I've seen Flag, like, 4 times now. Flag was so their last 3 songs were maybe the most amazing final set I've seen. They went from Nervous Breakdown, and you know at the end of Nervous Breakdown, Keith Morris goes blow ah! They took the blow up and they took that right into Louie. So I'm gonna blow ah Louie, and then after Louie, they rolled that right into Damaged, which is you know a atonal like just smasher of a song, and they did like a 7-minute. A version of it, and they were just like, psh, they leveled the place because pretty much every other band did, you know, music, you know, where Flag, I think, was pretty much the only band to do something that wasn't music. It was just a brutal attack, and it was so amazing. I mean, everybody in Flag is amazing. It was amazing. Interestingly, Keith Morris said something funny to me. Keith Morris was his usual prickly self, and you can never tell if he's joking or if he's genuinely annoyed, and he always seems like he's annoyed, you know? So anyways, he comes out, he says, I want to know why we aren't headlining. And on top of that, why isn't Damned headlining over us? You know, compared to them, we're just kids. You know, which is kind of a rancid diss. And I guess, I mean, I think it was awesome that Keith said that. But it's not Rancid's fault. They didn't, like, pick to headline. You know what I mean? But so anyways, that was – so
yeah, I could see that complaint. But the fact of the matter is Keith – Dave Vanian's like 62. Keith's older than that.
Keith is younger than Dave Vanian.
No, Keith is over 60. I remember his 60th birthday.
Dave Vanian,
Sensible 65 and Vanian 62 or something. I thought I'd look it up. Hey, I mean, I'll look it up. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But they're not. Keith Morris is not a young punk compared to the Damned.
No, but I mean, that's the joke. The joke that he's old. You know, he always whenever he's up there, he's got this joke. He's like, can we pause for a second? Can an old man get a sip of water? Can you spare a moment so an old man can have a sip of water? Which I think is hilarious. I think no one else gets the joke. Anyways, Rancid comes out, and I wonder if Lars took that shot to heart. Because when Rancid came out, they were like, oh, punk rock bowling is so great. How about the Exploited? Weren't they great? And Exploited is the band that played at the same time Flag did on the mini stage. You know what I mean?
Exploited are harder to come by their live shows because in recent years, because Waddy's had so many health issues,
yeah, but I mean,
canceled so many tours. I mean, it's getting to be pretty rare to be able to see Exploited.
Flag compared to Exploited is like RC Cola versus like Coca-Cola. You know what I mean? Like,
I don't necessarily disagree, but the fact of the matter is I've never seen Exploited. I would, and I've seen Flag. I don't know. Anyway,
I'll see Flag 50 times before I see Exploited once. You know what I mean?
Dave Vanian, 62. He will be 63 in October.
Keith's joking.
I bet you he's 65, but
maybe that's him joking. I don't. You know, Keith jokes. You know. So anyway, I've never seen Rancid before, and I do have sort of a chip on my shoulder about Rancid. And I don't even know why. I like Rancid, but I gotta say, man, like, both the Damned and Flag are much older than Rancid and Fear too, but. Flag and Damned especially, they all seemed vibrant where Rancid came up there. They're like, we're going to take it back to 1996. This is a song we wrote when we were in New York City. You know, it's like all the – it felt like an oldies act. Like they're like – and this goes back to 1993. Like they kept like doing these intros where like talking about what happened in the past. And it was kind of sloppy. People liked it. I thought it was okay. It was pretty
sloppy. They're always sloppy.
It was pretty sloppy sounding, honestly.
But it's honestly, it's kind of like, are they slopping in the groove? Or are they sloppy not in the groove? So time I saw them, I saw them at Riot Fest years ago and thinking, oh, man, this isn't really very good. But then at that camping thing last year, of course, they were one of the, you know, like basically like two bands each night get to play after dark. You know, they were the last band to play. And I remember thinking that they were actually quite good, despite the fact that Tim literally looks like a train hopping hobo from the 1920s.
Yeah, and I'm not piling on Tim because I think Tim's pretty cool, but I definitely do think his voice is a medical condition because he didn't really seem to have like control over his voice at all. You know, it seemed to come out.
He seems crazy.
It seemed to come out in very weird spurts. His voice. However, one thing.
That is the sad thing about these festivals. The all these festivals, who are the headliners every year, John? Rancid, NoFX, The Offspring, Dropkick Murphys. I mean, you can name basically a dozen bands that are always the headliners of any given night of these punk festivals. And it is kind of bullshit, honestly. I mean, a band like The Damned, who is so good, so influential, first British band to put out a single, first British band to put out an LP, first British band to tour the United States. And, you know, and they have to play at 5 o'clock in the freaking afternoon.
There's a reason, though, right?
Because, they didn't sell as many records.
Well, I mean, you get a band like Rancid, and Rancid has that cross-cultural appeal by which they're not just going to bring in the punks or the people that have that understanding of you know, the musical lineage and all that stuff, all that nice stuff that you said.
People,
right?
They're also bringing in people who go to EDM festivals.
Well, exactly, right? They're going to bring in the casuals as well. That's not good. Well, no, but it's good when you're trying to sell tickets.
No, listen, I understand, Adam. I'm not, it's not lack of understanding that bothers me. It's just the lack of, you know, the big one, it's not even Rancid, the one that bothers you. The big one for me is Pennywise. And I don't have anything against Pennywise. Every one of their albums has at least two great songs on it. But they're a huge, you know, they're like second to last band on any given night. They play after bands like The Damned or X or Fear at these festivals, Pennywise.
Well, listen, I hear you, and a lot of, I'm part of the.
When I throw Trauma Fest, old bands play last. All the kids will go home.
I mean, I hear you, and honestly, like on the punk rock bowling Facebook group, a lot of people are like, oh, Rancid was amazing, but the proof was in the pudding. I mean, Damned and Flag and even Fear blew Rancid away. I mean, you can't argue with that. I mean, they were better. But you know,
Fear was good. See, I love Fear, but I've heard kind of mixed reports of them lately.
They were awesome at punk rock bowling.
I gotta see them. They're like one of my few. I did see them one time in '99. But they're definitely on my list of bands that I really, really would like to see one more time before one of us dies, me or leaving.
I would say Rancid wasn't, I'm not saying Rancid was cool. I'm glad I got to see them. One thing that you have going for them, every song is a hit. Like every single song they have is like a hit.
Yeah, yeah. And they play heavily from Wolves and Life Won't Wait and all that. They pull heavily from their 90s albums.
So then after that, punk rock bowling, the main thing is over. I go over to a pool party where SZA, Crack, and Brad Logan are doing an acoustic show. And they cover Joy Division. Brad Logan did F minus for like the first time in like 15 years or something.
Did you go swimming, John, or did you just like sit around?
Yeah, honestly, no one was swimming. You might not even been allowed to go swimming, honestly. I'm not sure, you know. That was cool, and that it's like it was like a unique thing that you. Those are some of my favorite shows anymore. Like unique shows, like
yeah.
Damned are awesome, but I've seen the Damned. I mean, and you know, if I hadn't seen the Damned, it'd be different. But at this point, I'd rather see the Damned doing all of the Black album than just another set list because I'd seen the Damned. You know,
yeah.
And it was Brad Logan, SZA, Crack did an amazing acoustic set, and it was loose, and they were just kind of having fun, and it was really cool. I ran over to see Murder City Devils. No, I'm sorry, that was the next night. So then I get back to my place at about 3 or 4 o'clock. I get about 3 hours of sleep. I'm up next morning. I go to Ginger of the Drew Gets Wedding, where Elvis married them, and that was hilarious and awesome. Then I went. Then Ginger had the reception back at her hotel room, and it was basically in the Mega Suite in the Golden Nugget. It was like a 3-story hotel room, and it was that was just a bunch of people hanging out. Blank 77 was there. The Drew Gets were there. A couple other bands were there, and that was just so much fun, just hanging out and like this. I mean, I went right at the hotel room because I saw how much it cost. She told me it was a lot, but like it was a lot of fun and it was awesome. Then I run down to Punk Rock Bowling the next day. I mean, Punk Rock Bowling, and I caught. Let's see here, a lot of awesome bands. I caught. I saw the Darts. The Darts were awesome. They won over a lot of fans, I think, and they were honestly better than I thought they were going to be. They were really cool. Then I saw Effed Up. They did a lot of new stuff. I saw Adolescence. I'm a fan. I'm not a mega fan, but live they were actually really amazing. And I didn't realize, Tom, you can speak this. I didn't realize they have kind of a thrash element to them, or a slight thrash element. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I didn't necessarily hear that. You know. Last time I saw him, the big guy was still alive. What's his name? The guy who died. Steve Soto. But all the other three guys were young. So it's a singer. It was a singer and Steve Soto and three younger guys. Now it's probably like four younger guys.
Yeah, Brad, leftover cracks.
Well, it's kind of funny, actually, because the singer, who I can't imagine why I can't remember his name right now, but he sort of has a hippie vibe.
When I saw him, he kind of had like a Bay Area thrash vibe.
See, when I saw him, he didn't have shoes on, and he was just... I really like that band too. You know, they're one of those bands, they kind of like Fear in that they just never could capture the magic after their first album, which is not to say there wasn't good things after the first album, but man, they really seem to strike, you know, lightning a bottle with that first album.
I agree, but live,
I enjoyed them too. But I saw them a couple years ago. I've only seen them once, daytime festival setting, pissing and moaning. But it was good.
And then I saw Effed Up. Effed Up was awesome. I think everyone will admit Effed Up has had somewhat of a difficulty, I guess, especially in the big arenas, or you know, the big field stage, even in the club show. And that, you know, a lot of the songs have nuance and like kind of dance beats now, some of the songs anyways. And so it's not all hardcore anymore. I think they've really settled in or formed what have become what they wanted to be. And they were great live. After that, I ran over and saw Sloppy Seconds. Only a 20-minute set. I wish it was much longer. First time I've seen Sloppy Seconds. They were great. Sloppy Seconds is great. I saw the Coat Hangers, who only had a 20-minute set. Coat Hangers, one of the best sets of the whole thing. They came out. They just with a 20. They did exactly a 20-minute set. No talking. No nothing. They came out and they just song after song. They did mostly their punk stuff, and it was amazing. Then Sloppy Seconds did a 25-minute set. That was great too. And actually, during their set, I think it was the Vandals or Refused were playing, and BA was like, "We want to thank everyone for coming out, and everyone that's at the other stage, get effed," which I thought was hilarious, you know.
And then good old BA, man. Hey, guys, a picture of health, isn't he?
hey, whatever happened to the guy that was even bigger than him, you know?
It's funny, you know, he left the band in about 95. Yeah, because if you look at the Destroyed album cover, you're like, oh, there's B.A. Oh, no, that's not B.A. B.A.'s like skinny on the cover of Destroyed. He left in 95. See, last time we saw him when we were in Indiana a while back, my buddy was talking to him. And B.A. was talking about how even after all these years, they never really rekindled the friendship. Or it still hurts that the guy left the band or something. I don't know. Well, next time I see him, which hopefully will be in the fall, I'm going to actually dig deeper into that. Because usually, you know, you get to freaking... We show up at some venue a little early and we'll hang out at the bar and shoot the shit with him. And I want to get that story out of him.
Tom, I said to B.A., I said, oh, you know my friend Tom Trauma. And he goes, yeah.
Yeah, he probably, you know what the funny thing is?
I think I caught him off guard, honestly. You know what
I mean? No, the funny thing is, I don't know that they know our names at all, really. Because, I mean, we just show up. They know who we are. And they, you know, I mean, you know, it's weird. I don't want to say like we're all pals, because you know I'm not calling them to help me move, but you know we show up at the shows and they welcome us with open arms. So, but yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. But I actually, he and I have had multiple conversations, so he knows me by face if he doesn't know me by
name. So next up was Refused. I've never been a huge Refused fan, and I've never quite understood them. However, live I sort of got it. Live they were like really cool live. After that was Descendants. Now the Descendants are fairly, you know, the reunion is like 4 or 5 years old now. They were great. They did the Descendants thing. People loved it. It was awesome. After that, I rushed on over to see, let's see, which club show did I see after that? I rushed. Oh, I went and I saw Conflict and Anti-Sect, I'm getting confused here. Let's see. Was that Sunday?
Night. Your Sunday night.
Yeah. So I ran over and I saw Anti-Sect and Conflict.
So did you buy tickets for all these club shows, John?
I did, yeah. Honestly, it was all reasonable. It was like $20, $50.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, I mean, these are not huge bands. I mean, that's what those tickets for those kind of shows should cost.
Yeah, I mean,
I'm just saying. I mean, you bought a ton of tickets.
I did, but like my ticket for the whole thing, my tickets were like maybe $220. Like everything was like very reasonable. I'll give it to the Stern Brothers. Everything was very reasonably priced.
No, I know.
Well, during F'd Up set, Damien said something kind of weird. He said, I'd argue that the Stern Brothers have done more for punk rock than Black Flag or the Ramones, which seemed to be a Keith Morris diss right there. You know what I mean? And it's like, I can't agree with that at all. I mean, the Stern Brothers they do an amazing thing, but I mean it's a business, you know. Let's not kill anybody. So I thought that was a really weird thing to say.
I mean it's just not even accurate. The fact of the matter, you know, the Ramones codified punk rock. The Ramones are the most important punk band of all time. Black Flag, the next generation, was the most important punk band of all time. They're the ones who built up the touring route and did all that stuff. You know, it's not even comparable.
Do you think he was just, you know, you're in their house, you want to be gracious and kiss their ass?
But
why take a shot at Black Flag? Why not just say, you know, no one appreciates the Stern Bros have done so much that you don't even know for punk. Like why mention
Black Flag? If he'd been a real man, he'd been like, the Stern Bros have done more for punk rock than Rancid and the Offspring combined.
But see, that puts the Stern Brothers in a weird situation because they asked Rancid to be there.
Yeah,
but like, why make the competition? Why not just be like, the Stern Brothers are amazing and they've done so much of punk rock. That's all.
I get the like the dissing Black Flag thing is kind of sport. I mean, everybody essentially disses Black Flag at this point. Unfortunately, they've sort of made themselves the punching bag for this stuff. But the Ramones remark, that just doesn't even like.
Nobody
can do as much for punk as the Ramones, because the Ramones were so early on. It's like the Beatles. They'll never be a rock. You know, nobody can do as much for rock and roll as the Beatles. I don't care how good they are.
See, the Black Flag, this is really a Greg Ginn diss. But what Damien was saying, this is on Chuck Dukowski, because Chuck Dukowski is the guy that made Black Flag tour, you know? So that seemed very weird to me. I mean, it might have just been an off-the-cuff remark, but like, what a strange thing to say, I thought. Anyways, so then I saw Conflict, and honestly, like, a lot of people have a chip on the shoulder about Conflict, which I kind of agree with. Apparently, the lead singer, Colin, was walking around with a Conflict t-shirt on earlier in the day.
Which is worse, John? Walking around in your Conflict t-shirt, a t-shirt of your own band, or walking around in full boat gear?
Mm-hmm. It depends where you're at. Like, if you're at a pool show in full boat gear, that's awesome. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Everybody else there's wearing Liberty spikes, and you got your teal shirt.
Actually, well, I'm going to talk about that real. I'm wrapping up here, but I'm going to talk about that real briefly in a second. So, anyways, and also Conflict is very much a rule-based punk band. Like, this is the rules of punk, you know. And so a lot of people are annoyed by Conflict, and apparently the guy's kind of a dick and he's really cocky. But I gotta say, man, like, wow. Like, they played with so much, they played with so much energy, so much force. It was like heavy metal being played as punk. Like, I was really surprised about, like, how intense it was. Like, it was like super, like, I didn't even know the songs they were playing because they were playing so fast and so intense. And I like Conflict. And they would, like, the proof in the pudding, you know, I mean, put all the other stuff aside. When it came to rock out and, like, make a point, even if you don't agree with it, they did exactly what they said they would do, and it was amazing. Anti-Sect, you know, they've got a new singer, but it was cool. They were selling these limited CDs, live albums that, like, no one knew about, so I picked one of those up, and that was cool. I get back to my hotel at about 4 a.m. I crash out. I wake up at about 7 a.m. Next morning was the Stoppy Seconds pool party, which was amazing, and also Blank 77 played with Rachel Drugetz on guitar, I think. And that was awesome. Like, Sloppy Seconds did a full set.
Well, you know, the original guitar player for Blank 77 was a woman, too, Renee something.
No, she was there, but then maybe Rachel was on bass. One of the members couldn't make it, you know. So anyways, that was awesome. Then I flew on out to
college. So did they play a different set at the pool party?
Yeah, well, they only had like 25 – they played basically all the 25-minute set and a lot more songs, too. They played a ton of songs. Okay. And Sloppy Seconds was great. I mean, they're great. They're great.
Yeah, they're fun. I mean, yeah.
And then I flew out to Colorado. So I basically had about 9 hours of sleep across maybe 3 days. And the weird thing was I didn't really feel that tired. Like, I felt crazy, but I didn't feel that tired. And it was awesome. I don't know how they're going to beat it next year. I mean, last year was lame at the driving. The year before that was Iggy, which was amazing. But I mean, it was an amazing. I'm still sad that it's over. Like, I had an amazing time. Like, you run into so many people that you know. Fremont Street is so popping. You know, and if you do go, I highly recommend getting a hotel on Fremont Street, because honestly, like, it's so much more enjoyable when you don't have to worry about parking. You don't have to worry about driving. If you need a 2-hour nap, you can go get your 2-hour nap, get back up and hit the streets again. Like, it's an amazing time. It's amazing. It's amazing. And we're not even a sponsor. It's amazing.
Now, Adam, you went in the early days.
Yeah.
Could you still do it in your advanced age? Do you think you could still... God, I don't know if I could or not, man.
No, I mean,
Tom, I stayed out till about 3 o'clock in the morning.
Adam, Tom, you all coming next year? We're gonna party it up. Mark your calendar.
I'd be super interested. It's like a bucket
list thing for me. I would like to go.
Now, it's such a different animal than what it was when I went.
Bigger. Yeah.
But on the other hand, like, what John described just sounded awesome. So I mean, yeah. I had a little bit of that, you know. Oh, I was there in the early days and it's not the same anymore thing. Because like we went about like 4 or 5 years in a row with Punk News. And during the first few years, it was super small. I mean, like we weren't there right at the beginning or anything like that. Don't get me wrong. But like the first few years that we went, it was still super small. And it was really a bowling tournament. Like we played in the bowling tournament and, you know, we're on the lane next to Epitaph or Fat or Sidewind Dummy or something like that. And we're, you know, it was kind of like about the bowling. And then there was these club shows at night that went with it, but it wasn't a music festival. And then the last
year, is it time to put the bowling team together?
Yeah, it is. We're going next year. Boys, we're going next year.
I suck at bowling.
Who gives a shit, Tom?
I can throw maybe like 120.
Tom, we actually shouldn't put together a bowling team because, you know what, I'd rather have fun and just go to like a million shows and hang out with people than bowl, to tell you the truth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so, well, because what we learned, at least, I don't know if this is different now. They still do the bowling, right? Like, that's still...
Yeah, there is, but I mean, I saw the signups for it, but I had no idea where the actual bowling
was. Right, so the... Back when we did it, like, the teams from all the Californian labels, they're fucking serious about it. Like we would get there and we'd all kind of like we'd be goofing around and stuff like that and like bowling really badly because we're like we're not good at it, right? But you didn't want to go too far. Like you didn't want to like get drunk and start like slopping around the place, because those teams, you know, the Epitaph teams, whatever, like, they practiced, like, they were a bowling team. Like, they were there intending to win. They were not there for you to, like, fuck up their game by being too much of a dumb punk, right? So
they, like, have those things that were on their hands and the,
yeah,
their own shoes and stuff.
But like, the last year that I went, which is probably still, like, close to 10 years ago at this point, but the last year that I went was the first year that they had, like, an outdoor festival kind of aspect to it. And, like, I remember kind of, like, you know, standing there with my nose at a joint being like, oh, this isn't the same anymore. But what John just described now, especially maybe if you hit up all those club shows and all that, sounds super amazing. So I don't know, maybe that was growing pains, or maybe that was just me at the time, but, you know, it sounds really fucking cool, man.
We're going next
John year. John and I are gonna have the party room next year.
Listen, boys, all three of us are going next year. We're gonna do a live podcast. Actually, no, we're not. We're just gonna have fun and party and have an awesome time. Oh, one of the things that I did want to mention. So Alternative Tentacles had a booth there, of course, and they were selling Jello's personal records again. And I got a Hino record. You guys know, like, Jello's thing with Hino, right?
Uh-uh.
Like, Jello's got this weird fixation with the singer Hino, who's, like, this German singer. And Jello, like, thinks he's terrible, but he has, like, the world's biggest Hino collection. And so I own what was Jello Biafra's Hino record, one of the hundreds, which nice. I found amusing. And I almost bought a pair of Jello Biafra sunglasses, but I thought, no, that's getting into weird territory. To buy his sunglasses just because they're his sunglasses.
It's basically just like a garage sale, except for, like, he's selling it to the perfect audience where they all want his crap.
Exactly. Anyways, so boys, we're going next year. Enough said.
Oh. We better go to, you know, I can't stay up all night tonight. We better probably call this thing to a halt. We are at, what are we at?
We're at an hour 30.
Yeah, I was going to say, we're well over an hour and a half, and we ain't even played any songs. I don't need to. I can get it next week.
Yeah, forget, no one cares about songs. They care about John having fun at Punk Rock
Bowling. John at Punk Rock Bowling. I'm telling you, my fun weekend in Chicago is so lame compared to you guys' massive adventures. But
boys, next year we're going, boys. Next year we are going.
You know, this year, I'm on a rotation where I work every sixth weekend. So I had to work the weekend, the holiday weekend. So I wasn't really looking at this year. And honestly, I've seen better lineups than this year.
At Punk Rock Bowling?
Yeah.
What are you talking about, Tom? Flag, Dan, yeah, Beer, but like, effed
yeah,
up.
Yeah, it was
Inferno, Flipper.
It's definitely Joe. Punk Rock Bowling is definitely the older guy punk rock festival. No question.
Tom, this year was.
Last year was definitely worse, because I know, like, At the Drive-In was there last year, and a couple other. I don't know. No, it was great. There's a lot of great stuff. We'll go. I want to go. But now I want to go to bed because it's super late.
All right, John, do you want to just, like, end things with a song then?
Okay. We talked about Jello. Alternative Tentacles just put out an album by a band called The Silver Machine, which I thought was pure Hawkwind worship, but honestly, thankfully, it's not. The album is called Standing on the Bare Ground, and actually, it's kind of like Pink Floyd meets Chromey Talk. It's a pretty neat album. It's very spacey. This is a track off that. It's called The Insect, and I think it's the closing track, and it's real cool. This is the Silver Machine.